Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Everybody thinks we're wrong. Mother, who are they to judge us? Mother, mother, simply call the sweet where I hello. Mother, mother, woo. Welcome to Voices of Wisdom live on Tribe Family Channel. I am the creator of Tribe Family Channel, Beverly Black. It is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to welcome you to Season 6, Episode 3 of Voices of Wisdom, so named after my sister, Rachel Berry, who has gone on to be with the Lord. Her mantra is, everyone knows something that everyone else needs to know, and therefore she evoked wisdom and wanted us to all share what we knew with each other. So that is the platform of this show. It is my pleasure to have members of Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, family and friends. I am also expecting Mr. Marshall Thompson, the last man standing of the Shylights that actually went to school with Emmett Till in Chicago. Now, for our listeners' sake, because we're dealing with millennials and likewise, so if you don't know about Emmett Till, Emmett Lewis Till, born July 25th, 1941, sunset August 28, 1965, was an African-American teenager who was lynched in Mississippi at the age of 14 after reportedly flirting with a white woman. Now, on Wikipedia, it continues, Till was from Chicago, Illinois, and visiting relatives in Money, a small town in Mississippi, in the Mississippi Delta region. He spoke to 21-year-old Carolyn Bryant, it continues to read, the married proprietor of a small grocery store there. Several nights later, Bryant's husband Roy and his half-brother J.W. Millam went to Till's great-uncle's house and abducted the boy. They took him away, beat and mutilated him before shooting him and sinking his body in the Tallahatchie River. 3 days later, Till's body was discovered and retrieved from the river. It is very disheartening to even conceive this happening at the age of 14 and not that long ago. Till's body was returned to Chicago. His mother, who had mostly raised him, insisted on a public funeral service with an open casket to show the world the brutality of the killing. The open coffin funeral held by Mammy Till Bradley exposed the world to more than her son Emmett Till's bloated, mutilated body. Her decision focused attention not only on American racism and the barbarism of lynching, but also on the limitations and vulnerabilities of American democracy. And it is to that end that brings us to this show, and I want to welcome Deborah Watts from the Emmett Till Legacy Family Foundation, and she will introduce our area code 913 caller. Deborah, how are you? Hello, Deborah.
Hi, Beverly.
Hello, Deborah.
Yes, can you hear me now?
That's okay. Yes, I can hear you now. You know these digital phones and the formats and Blog Talk Radio and all of that. We're not going to even be bothered with that. How are you doing this evening?
I am wonderful. I am wonderful. And thank you so much for having me again on your show. I appreciate it.
Always. You're always welcome here. You know, we always want to offer our platform so that we can keep the world abreast of what's going on with you, with the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation. And also with the recently signed Emmett Till Unresolved Civil Rights Crimes Reauthorization Act of 2016. Now, for our listeners, before I turn this over to you, Deborah, to sum it all up, I just want to say that they can find that bill at www.congress.gov/bill/114-congress/house-bill/5067. So if you go to congress.com, just search Emmett Till bill. This bill permanently reauthorizes the Emmett Till Unresolved Civil Rights Crime Act of 2007, Emmett Till Act, and expands the responsibilities of the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation to include the investigation and prosecution of criminal civil rights statutes violations that resulted in a death, regardless of when the violations occurred. Currently, the Emmett Till Act is scheduled to expire at the end of fiscal year 2017, and such investigations are limited to violations that occurred before 1970. So there's a lot of complexities, and we have the family here that can break it all down for us. So, Deborah, tell our audience who you are and what you do in terms of or who you are to Emmett Till and the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. I am a cousin of Emmett Till. Our great-grandfathers were brothers. Joe Smith, my great-grandfather, and his great-grandfather was George Smith. Both reared in the Mississippi area and raised their families there. And I'm a product of what they did in terms of keeping the family together. We had a family of love, compassion, and support. And it's just an honor, you know, to have the opportunity to move forward with some of the goals that that have been placed in our family. Number one, keeping them together, and then number two, from a an organizational perspective, we founded the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation in 2005. The Emmett Till Foundation was actually founded and created by Emmett Till's grandmother and mother years before. And so as an extension, a way to support and expand their footprint, we started the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation in 2005. We are honored that we have this opportunity to keep the story alive, to keep Emmett's legacy alive and his mother, his wonderful mother, who made that decision to have the open casket funeral. We know that as we refer to her as the mother of the movement, you know, if it was not for the courage of Mamie Till Mobley, we wouldn't be talking about Emmett Till today. I think she was a wonderful example for the mothers who are standing in, I guess, in the gap for their children and moving forward for justice in the unfortunate the club that they belong to, where they've lost their sons and daughters, you know, to whether police violence and in other areas of violence. So, you know, Mamie Till Mobley, that's the pronunciation of her name, Mamie, is just someone that I think shined a light, you know, on the injustice in America, those dark places in America that existed. And because of her, you know, we're able to talk about Emmett, but talk about Emmett with hope. You know, we can provide a area of hope for other young people in America. And so that's what she started doing with the Emmett Till Players, and we're hoping to build this bridge from the past to the present and future with young people and supporting women, young men, and their families in pursuing their education going forward. So I'm just honored and and feel very privileged to have this opportunity. And you did mention about the Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Act, the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Act that was reauthorized mm-hmm. just recently. In fact, on Friday the 16th, President Obama was able to sign that bill. And we owe mm-hmm. a lot. We owe a lot of the hard work, particularly with the origination of the bill in 2007, which was signed by President Bush, to a number of people. One of which is Alvin Sykes, who is, I believe, on the line right now. And he has the Emmett Till Justice Campaign, and he can tell you a little bit more about that in a few moments. And then most recently, the past few years, though, the Cold Case Justice Initiative, along with many others, which formed a coalition, including family members, other foundations, NAACP, and other organizations, which I'll name later, too, were a part of the success in moving this forward. But I must say that, you know, you don't get this kind of victory alone. And it did take mm-hmm. an act in Congress and in the Senate, in the House and the Senate, to get the bill passed. And so we owe a lot to the authors of the bill, along with Senator Burr out of North Carolina, Patrick Leahy out of Vermont, Senator Claire McCaskill out of Missouri, Senator Roy Blunt out of Missouri as well. And in the House, of course, our original sponsors were Representative John Lewis out of Georgia, Jim Sensenberger, out of Wisconsin, and also John Conyers, Representative John Conyers Jr. out of Michigan. And so because of their efforts, because of their sense of righting wrongs, we have this bill that's passed and has been signed into law by President Obama, and that's the reauthorization of the act.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the in-depth summary. Now, you did mention your caller's name. Can you introduce him, please, and bring him on?
Yes. I believe we have Alvin Sykes, who leads the Emmett Till Justice Campaign, and Alvin has played a role very early on doing justice for many others, actually. That's his background, and he can tell you a little bit more about that. But more specifically to what we're talking about today, he has a history with working with the Department of Justice and others in bringing that first bill to light, if you will, and creating the verbiage and writing it, along with support of others. And so I'd like to introduce Alvin Sykes. I believe he's on. Are you on, Alvin?
Yes, Deborah, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yes, very clearly, yes.
Great.
Hello, Mr. Thank Sykes, you. And welcome to Tribe Family Channel.
Welcome
to Tribe Family Channel. I said, hello, Mr. Sykes. Welcome to Tribe Family Channel. I'm Beverly Black, the creator, and I want to thank you and Deborah both for being here. Go ahead and tell our audience about yourself and how you play your role in this.
Okay. Thank you very much, and I'm certainly honored to be able to participate in this show and help spread the word throughout the country. I'll just start with my role with the Emmett Till case and the Emmett Till bill and then go backwards historically. After 40-some years as a human rights activist, starting as a child, I had been working, as Deborah said, with several different cases over the years and had developed a long-time relationship with the Justice Department in looking at and reopening cases, particularly hate crime-related cases. At the end of 2002, I read an article in our local black newspaper, the Kansas City Call, that had, it was an article talking about movies and books being done on the Emmett Till case. And in that article, it spoke about where Mamie Till Mobley had been trying to get her son's case reopened since 1956, and it spoke about two filmmakers, one named Stanley Nelson, who had did a documentary on Emmett Till called The Murder of Emmett Till that was shown on PBS, American Experience, and then Keith Beauchamp, who was a filmmaker who had developed a film called The Untold Story of Emmett Lewis Till. Collectively, in the article, the filmmakers spoke about their separate investigations into the case and their belief that there may be other people who may have been involved in his killing and that may still be alive. And so once I seen that, I reached out to Emmett's mother and to Wheeler Parker in Chicago and told her about the work that I had been doing and if there was a relationship between what had become, and I'll speak in more details about that, my signature case, which was the racially motivated killing of a musician here in Kansas City named Stephen Harvey, whose widow on her mother's side was related to Emmett Till's relatives. And so when I read this article in 2002 and I reached out to them, I then also reached out to the Attorney General, John Ashcroft's office at the time, and told him that I was going to be looking into the possibility of reopening the case. I then went and met me along with Donald Berger, a retired Justice Department official. We then went to Chicago and met with Emmett's mother and expressed to her what we felt that could be done and what I had already done, and that I believe that there could be an investigation into the case and that we had already initiated efforts in that direction. The short of it was that we were then able to work with the Civil Rights Division and bring them together with state officials in Mississippi, in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Mississippi, and bring it together to reopen the case in 2004, where there was a joint investigation by the FBI and the state prosecutor Joyce Childs in Mississippi. During my time going throughout the South, and particularly in Mississippi and other places, I started hearing about these other cases, ones that didn't have the famous names of Cheney, Goodman, and Cheney, Goodman, and Scherner, or Emmett Till, or Meg Evers, but people who were lost in the middle of the night, or went to school and never came back, and nobody had really looked for them. So as we moved with the Emmett Till case, then there was an effort made by Senator Schumer in New York, and Senator Jim Talent in Missouri. He preceded Claire McCaskill's involvement. And in the short of that, which is what led to the Emmett Till Act, I basically told him that there needed to be a unit in the Justice Department and the FBI where there'd be centralized resources and experience to look into these cases to find first the truth about the death, if possible, and then if there was a possibility of securing justice after that, to move toward that. That led to the creation of the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Act of 2007, which had a budget of authorized budget of $135 million to spend 10 years looking for these cases and to provide assistance with them in doing that. That was set to expire in 2017, in terms of next year. So we started working toward in 2014 in earnest to start working toward the Reauthorization Act. By that time, there had been other participants that later became part of the coalition, in particular a couple of universities, Syracuse University, Northeastern University, and Emory, and some of these others, that created classes to investigate cold cases. And by then, we started to work toward this reauthorization effort. That then led to the introduction this year of the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Reauthorization Act of 2016. That law, when we introduced it, was designed to lift the time limit off of the case that they could consider from 1969 forward unlimitedly, in an unlimited way, and then two, to make it a permanent law so that it didn't have to be reauthorized every 10 years, as well as other supporting actions within it. Because of the dynamics of the politics in this being an election year, in all, but balanced by the extreme leadership, active leadership of Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, we were able to get the bill passed, but we had to do some compromises. And so, one, we were able to make it a permanent law, so the act itself would never have to be reauthorized. However, we do have to have every 10 years a reauthorization and subsequent reappropriation of the annual budget for it. We were also not able at this time to get the bill lifted completely into the future. The Department of Justice had objected to that, so we compromised with it, where the deadline for consideration of racially motivated cases are now gone from from December 31st, 1969 to December 31st, 1979, and that is the bill that with the same authorization and appropriation amount, $13.5 million a year, that President Obama, who was a co-sponsor of the original Till bill, along with Vice President Biden, they both were co-sponsors when they both were in the Senate when the bill first came up that was signed in 2007. And now they have the distinction of not only engaging in the implementation of the bill, but now as of the 16th of December, by signing the bill into law, President Obama's continued involvement in the case has moved forward.
Now, Alvin, I do want to, this is Deborah, I do want to mention specifically those others that were part of the coalition, which is, you know, played a key role as well. And in fact, they have been engaging with other families who have been impacted and hopefully will be impacted by the success of this becoming law. There are many other families out there that have come forward, you know, over the years with stories, with situations where a loved one has gone missing or where someone was murdered and there was no investigation, in-person interviews, some of those cases that were a part of the bill that was signed previously, Beverly, most of those have been closed, and we can talk specifically about that later. But I just want to mention the key organizational supporters, the Civil Rights and Restorative Justice Project at Northeastern, which Alvin mentioned, that's with the University School of Law, the Cold Case Justice Initiative at Syracuse University College of Law, the Emmett Till Justice Campaign, of which Alvin represents, Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, of which I represent, the Georgia Civil Rights Cold Case Project at Emory, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights, the Mamie Till Mobley Memorial Foundation, which Erica Gordon Taylor is also a family member. She leads that. The National Association of the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, the Legal Defense Fund of the NAACP, the Urban League, and then the Southern Poverty Law Center have all played a role in making sure that the information was there and that concerns from the earlier bill that gaps and areas that needed to be strengthened, you know, many of them, they came together with suggestions and recommendations, which, you know, some of those things have been implemented in this new law. And so we're really, you know, excited about the collaboration, advisory committees, and then their inclusion. As Alvin mentioned, you know, implementation hasn't begun yet, but I think, you know, once that bill was signed by the president, we're thinking, and I believe Alvin, along with others, are thinking about, okay, how do we, you know, ensure that the effectiveness of this new law has an impact, you know, on those cases out there that have never, you know, been investigated. How, you know, how is it going to move forward? So those things are in the works, are in the, you know, thinking about how we work with the Department of Justice and others to make sure that you know, these families at least receive answers, you know, that at least understand the truth about what may have happened to their loved one. There may not be prosecutions, unfortunately, but hopefully there'll be some information that's passed on to them that will help them understand what happened. And then hopefully, my hope is, yes, there will be prosecutions, but, you know, the time has gone past us, Beverly, and we know that even with the 126 or so, which were part of the first act or part of the first list of cases, I believe, was it Alvin just one of those that ended up in prosecution?
Yeah, there was only one that ended in prosecution. There were many of the ones, 126, that were solved in the sense of knowing who did it where they didn't know before or getting the answers. A lot of those cases, the perpetrators were already dead. And by the time that the law was enacted and preceded by the Cold Case Initiative in the Justice Department, and more importantly, by the states themselves that had did 22 convictions prior to the federal action becoming involved. So that has been the totality of the results, including the 22 from the state up to now. Now it has been extended 10 years, so we're looking to see cases that will be 70s that are racially motivated that can be looked at and see whether there's possibility of prosecution, as well as identifying other cases past the 70s that we can use for justification in extending and the lifting of the time limit into the future. And that was the hurdle that we had with the Justice Department opposition to parts of it, was to show justification that there were cases beyond the 70s where they really wanted it to stay at 69, but and go into the 70s, and we wanted it lifted permanently so that there will always be a cold case, civil rights cold case unit forever, but we have to take it in incremental steps.
And one other thing I do want to add, Beverly, too. You know, as we move into, you know, a new leader, new president, you know, we, you know, it's so important for us, you know, as we identify our issues and our, you know, policy changes that we want, that we understand that we have to talk on both sides of the aisle. And that is clearly what happened with the success of this bill. This was a bipartisan effort. It took the staff of both, you know, Senate, the House, Republicans, and Democrats, you know, to make sure that things move forward, and a collaborative effort as well. I mean, and those things are hard. You know, those things aren't the most easiest things to do, but we're talking politics, we're talking negotiations, we're talking, you know, a give and a take, and we're talking still, you know, standing firm on the goals that you want to have. So I think as a collaborative effort, I think we feel pretty good about the success, and there's still a lot more work to do. There's still families out there that have never, you know, come forward, and I've offered on other shows and other interviews that, you know, any of those organizations that I mentioned, if there are people that are listening and know of someone in their family, and there are some folks that I have talked to in every audience that I have presented to or been amongst, and we've talked about, you know, this bill and cases and Emmett's story, there are oftentimes, and in most of those audiences, someone that comes forward and mentions a family member that didn't come home, or someone, you know, who there was a bomb placed, you know, under their porch or in their car, what have you. And there are other families out there that I know that need to come forward, and they should talk about this. They should bring this, you know, their case or their situation, you know, forward to any of those organizations that I mentioned. And for sure, they can email, you know, the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation at info@emmettilllegacyfoundation.com, and even give us a call at our office number as well, you know, if they know of others, and we'll, you know, be sure to pass that on, you know, to the appropriate groups. But, you know, it's not like, you know, and the cases have to be racially motivated cases. They have to have that element to fall under this particular act, but you know, I think with the statute of limitations, which you know, it allows the state and federal government to investigate cases. There's, you know, we have a little bit more freedom now, you know, to take a look at cases that fall, you know, within those you know, that kind of framework.
Right. And Mr. Sykes, would you please give out your information as to the organization that you are involved with, and if you want our listeners to reach out to you as well?
Yes, I'm the president of the Emmett Till Justice Campaign. You can reach me by email at alvinsykes@hotmail.com, or you can call 913-954-2360. If you have any information relating to any case or any potential case that you're aware of, you can contact me, just like you contact Deborah or any other organizations that she named off and we'll certainly get it to the appropriate officials, state and federal, to take a look at it.
And that's half the battle,
good.
You know. That's half the battle. You know, sometimes folks are out there and they don't know who to call or who to reach out to, and that's why I thought it was important to mention those other organizations, because they're in your community. You know, they are there. We're there. And so I think with the work that each of us, you know, have been doing in many of these communities, we're there, you know, we're approachable. You can find us, you know, Instagram. You can find us Twitter, email, and, you know, Facebook as well. So we're just offering this because, you know, as I sit here and some of my other family members, we understand, you know, that the justice, you know, justice in Emmett's case was not done. I mean, it was not.
It was not. And that's what I wanted to expound upon, Deborah, not to cut you off, because just like Mr. Sykes said, some of those perpetrators have died. And so in the case of the men that did this horrible act to Emmett Till, they admitted in court, well, they admitted it somewhere, history
magazine
unfolds.
Yeah, look,
but
look
yet
magazine,
they were never prosecuted.
No, they were acquitted of the murder. They later shared their story, what they did to Emmett, why they murdered him, and I'll tell you many of the reasons. And we share this in our presentation, The Power of History, Turning Tragedy into Triumph. We share a documentary where one of the interviewers of those two, after they confessed, if you will, to Look Magazine, shared exactly why they murdered him. They share that. It's in their confession. You can even find it online. And I save it sometimes for my presentations because it is clearly echoing even from 1955 to 2016. They talked about voting. They talked about interracial relationships. They talked about African Americans having the ability to vote and running the government. You know, so some of those similar things, and this is why Emmett was murdered. You know, he didn't say yes, sir, no, sir. You know, so some of those same things are existing today. Now, the justice, though, for us, is that we will not allow Emmett's death to be in vain. We will continue to share his story. We will contribute to whatever media outlet, as long as it's, you know, ethical and it's honest and it's sharing in making sure that that story is told, like the HBO series that's coming up here soon, like some of the other movies that are coming up that Keith Beauchamp is working on. I believe Devery Anderson is working on, you know, one with Will Smith and Jay-Z. So the interest is there. Chris Benson is working on one based on the book that Mamie Till co-wrote with him, along with Chaz Ebert, who's producing that. You've got people like Whoopi Goldberg that are, you know, that are involved as well as producers. So this is our justice. Our justice is that we will continue, and with these families that will be impacted, that's justice for us as well. So we're not going to sit back and just, you know, fold our arms and go, well, you know, things weren't done. No, we're going to continue to share the story. We're going to continue to help other families achieve justice. We're going to also continue to share the story and help other young people reach areas in their life and success areas that Emmett did not have a chance to. So, you know, I think we're about that business, and, you know, we always are looking for support. We're always looking for a platform and opportunities to share this. We're committed to it. I've given over my profession, you know, to it as well. And, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of others who are hoping that we continue on. Now, of course, as Alvin probably even knows, and you know too, Beverly, there are some that want us to just be quiet. They want us to forget. They want us to say,
no,
this
that's
happens.
Not happening.
It's not going to happen. I promise you. And so with all the conviction that I think we have, with the support of those other organizations that I named, with Alvin, he's, you know, we did the 50th anniversary in honoring Emmett. And we did it in Chicago. We did the 50th and the 55th in Chicago. The 60th was held there as well. Alvin was at all of those. And so we go back. And then also, I do want to say our cousins have been, you know, out speaking. They've been writing books. They've been at Delta State doing tours. Wheeler Parker, who actually traveled from Chicago to Mississippi with Emmett. My cousin Simeon Wright, who was in the bed with Emmett when he was kidnapped. So, no, you know, we're not going to allow his death to be in vain. And there, you know, families have been impacted. Our family, through our pain, you know, we're going to stand on top of that and move forward and help other people move forward in their lives as well. So we're proud to do that.
Amen to that. Amen to that. And I'm definitely going to continue to raise the baton. I, as you know, Deborah, I put the house that Emmett Till was kidnapped from on the cover of my client, Dr. Thelma Battle Buckner's book, The Battle of a Daytime Nightmare by Dr. Thelma Battle Buckner, because her family used to live in the house before Emmett Till's grandfather and uncle moved into the house in East Money, Mississippi. And they actually have a town named after their family in Battle, Mississippi. And I know that you are very aware of the family. The legendary Sounds of Blackness member, Patricia Lacey Aiken, whose voice is heard on the opening of this show, Voices of Wisdom. And yes, that's Patricia Lacey Aiken, Dr. Thelma Battle Buckner's daughter. And her mother's book came by way of our producer, who is Bruce George, the creator and co-founder of Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO and the founder of Geniuses Common. So I put the house on the cover of the book to preserve history, to not allow anything to be swept under the rug. And so I commend all of you for the continued work that you're doing, not allowing Emmett Till and Mamie Till's legacy to be swept under the rug. And you're right, it took so much courage for his mother to, you know, walk in her pain, but also she knew that she had to do that for the nation to know, because it is a fight. It's a fight to stay alive. It's a fight against genocide, and it's a fight in a racist systemic society. And like you said, Deborah, there are so many reflections of back then that still play out today. History repeats itself. And you mentioned us having a new leader coming into office. I don't know so much about a new leader. I do know that there is a new administration coming in where the jury is still out on the leader part. However, I do want to thank you for the lead and the role that you both play in keeping the Emmett Till legacy alive, to the hard work that culminated in the Emmett Till Act. And I definitely want to thank you both for the time that you've taken to spend and talk to me and really, you know, give that history and the gems, because what we didn't know, we know now. And now that we know, we can all play a role in supporting you all. I love what you do every year, calling for everyone to wear black and white. And so before we close, tell our audience how we can participate in some of the activities, such as wearing black and white on July 25th.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Beverly. Well, we have created something, and it's for everyone, I mean, across the world, actually, a time for unity in black and white. And that's an opportunity for us to pause at noon, everyone at noon at their, you know, appointed time, whatever time zone that they're in, and have a moment of silence. Wear black and white, and it's a way to show unity and to remember Emmett Till. Now, the July 25th date, of course, is his birth date, and we do it twice. We also do that same thing on the anniversary of his death, which is August 28th, and that's such an important date in our history. It was the date, you know, that was chosen for the March on Washington that Martin Luther King selected. It was also the date that President Obama had accepted the nomination for being the 44th president of the United States. And so we want people to remember. We want folks to also join us with a covenant that young people had put together called Never Again. It's we're calling the Never Again Movement and Pledge, but now we're saying it's the Never Again Challenge, you know, and that we want people to look at Never Again. It's actually on Facebook and on our website as well. But we asked young people, Beverly, what were they willing to stand up for and what were they willing to stand against? They came up with an image. They came up with a slogan and a pledge. And I would love to read it just briefly with you. And it's, I pledge to never again.
Yes, please do.
I pledge to never again allow the ugly parts of our past history to become the present. I will forever stand up against racism, hatred, injustice, and crimes against our youth. I will always stand up for peace, justice, and equality for all. Never again. And there's a symbol that looks very similar to the peace sign. And if you look on our Facebook page at Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, you'll see all kinds of celebrities and others who have either taken pictures or we've taken pictures of them holding up the peace sign or the Never Again pledge card. And they're committing to this covenant. You know, it's pretty simple, but it's very, very powerful. And now, you know, with the mannequin challenge, we're saying this is let's do the Never Again challenge. You know, let's make sure that we're committing to something that we all can stand up for and stand against. So it brings me just joy, and we're just privileged to have these opportunities to work with our young people and help them to push that initiative along. But the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, again, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're established in 2005, and basically we're there to preserve the memory and the legacy of Emmett Till and his mother, Mamie Till Mobley. And through something that we call ETIL, which is the Emmett Till Institute for Learning and Leadership, we're creating this legacy of hope and building a bridge from the past to the present and future. We're bringing awareness to Emmett's place in history and his relevance today. We're offering scholarships, programming, curriculum, opportunities, and support that equip, educate, and inspire and empower our youth, women, and their families to achieve their fullest potential for a better tomorrow. And so we do that with a lot of help and support from our ambassadors, you know, folks like Alvin, who's on the line here, and others who have, you know, played a key role, our board as well. And, you know, it's holiday season, and I just want to thank everyone for, you know, joining up with us. I mean, right now, you know, we do this without a lot of money. You know, it's a commitment we've made. But we're always, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, we're providing these scholarships. We help an organization called Proceed. We help send students on the annual HBCU college tour. We also do a women's empowerment symposium called Loving from the Inside Out. And then we do The Power of History, Turning Tragedy into Triumph, where we go to colleges, universities, high schools, middle schools, and we share the Who Killed Emmett Till story. And then we also include some of our cousins along with filmmakers in some of the program as an organization's budget will permit. And so we're just happy to continue with this work, and we feel very honored and privileged to have, you know, this opportunity.
Well, I feel very honored and privileged to have this opportunity to have spoke with you, Deborah Watts of the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, and Mr. Sykes over there. I want to thank you both for your time and for all your dedicated hard work for keeping the legacy alive, for carrying the baton. There are just no words. There's just no words, especially for something so reprehensible, but to be able to, like you said, turn, you know, tragedy into triumph so that what prevails is the message of hope and unity so that it never happens again. I will definitely continue to welcome you and your voice to Voices of Wisdom on Tribe Family Channel. And again, we are sponsored by Mr. Bruce George, the creator and co-founder of Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO and the founder of Genius is Common. I want to invite both of you to express what your genius is by visiting geniusiscommon.com, and you can tell them about your organizational work. There's videos. It's in every country around the world, and we have, oh my goodness, we have everyone. We have Sheila Ray Charles, Malik Yoba, Nikki Giovanni. We'll have Lamont McLemore soon, and he will be also our next guest on Voices of Wisdom, January 5th, 2017. Lamont McLemore is the founding member of the Fifth Dimension, and we will be talking about keeping the dream alive and his new song entitled Cease Fire. It is a global message that if we would just cease fire, the world could attain peace. So it is very powerful.
Love it.
So please, yes, please connect with him on Facebook, Lamont McLemore. You will see his picture. He still looks the same as he did when they were singing Up, Up, and Away. And Mr. Sykes, Deborah Watts, thank you so much once again. Have a wonderful holy day season. Happy Kwanzaa and Happy New Year. And we will talk again soon. For our listeners, you can go to our archives and catch this show at blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul, or you can follow our parent company on Twitter at Gumbo for the Soul, also Tribe Family Channel at Tribe Family US. I am Beverly Black, the host and creator of Tribe Family Channel, brought to you by Gumbo for the Soul International. It has been an honor and a privilege. Please continue to walk in peace. Thank you so much, Deborah and Mr. Sykes. You have a wonderful, wonderful
evening. Thank you very much. I'm so honored to participate in it and looking forward to it in the future, and want to encourage everyone to keep their eyes on Washington, D.C. as we work to develop the master plan on how to move the implementation of this bill in a manhunt throughout the country.
I love it. Thank you.
Indeed.
Thanks, Beverly. We're off.
Indeed.
We're off now, right? We are off, right?
No, we're still on and recording.
Oh, we're
and,
off. But, you know,
whatever private comments you want to say, continue.
Well, Alvin, and thank you for saying that, too. And that one thing I do, two things I do want to say, and that is, you know, we really would like to have this campaign for Mamie Till Mobley to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom. She, you know, is no longer with us. She unfortunately passed on in 2003. But we know that without her demonstrating the grace, the dignity, and the courage, that there are many others that could not walk in this space that she's walking in today with the kind of grace and dignity and courage. And her efforts sparked the civil rights movement. So Mamie for the Medal of Freedom, which is a hashtag that we started earlier this year, and we really would want to get that support, make that go viral, and hopefully under the new administration, they will have the opportunity, you know, to know more about her and to know more about, you know, and to have the honor of giving her that award. The other thing I do want to say is that another person that we need to thank for creating this wonderful edifice, if you will, the National Museum of African American History and Culture, which is fabulous, in Washington, D.C., and that's Lonnie Bunch. Lonnie Bunch, I met in 2005. He's the director. There at that museum in Washington, D.C., is the original casket that Emmett was actually buried in. And there is a memorial. He's done just an incredible job of presenting a wonderful, I'd say, demonstration of Mamie's courage, the story of Emmett, and also the original casket. So I'd like to invite, you know, people to make sure that they visit that museum, that they support the museum, and they honor Emmett, you know, by visiting the memorial that's been established there, along with the many other contributions that African Americans have paid and played in this country.
And I echo that sentiment with you. It is imperative that we visit the museum. Bruce George and myself, on behalf of Geniuses Common and Gumbo for the Soul International, gave away 12 tickets to the museum. We gave away 6 in November, and we gave away 6 in December. And so that enabled 12 people to go to the museum before, you know, they started kind of limiting, but they've reopened it now, how they're distributing the tickets. So that was something that we were honored to be able to do, and I'm definitely going to make sure that I get back over to the East Coast so that I can visit as well. So now we are going to conclude this show, but I definitely want to thank you both once again, and I want to connect with you later, Deborah. I want to talk to you about helping Mamie Till get that award and using the platform Geniuses Common, which you would be able to do a video and evoke that and have that spread on our global network. And so I'll be in touch with you. And Mr. Sykes, thank you so much. And you're also welcome to do a video for geniusescommon.com. And we also have a page where your logo can be placed there. And then others can know it's in 7 countries. And there's anywhere from the 10-year-old ice cream entrepreneur to, like I said, people of A-list status and just everyone in between. We all have a genius seed, and we're going to play Sheila Ray Charles's Geniuses Common video at the conclusion of this show. So thank you once again for appearing on Voices of Wisdom with us. And we want to wish you a very, very happy and prosperous 2017. And we will talk soon. Mr. Sykes, Ms. Watts, have a blessed one. And thank you once again.
Thank you so much.
It is my pleasure. It is my pleasure. And ladies and gentlemen, we would like to introduce Sheila Ray Charles, Genius is Common, on behalf of our sponsors. Thank you and good night.
Hey, everybody. I'm Sheila Ray Charles, daughter of the legendary singer Ray Charles, and I want to tell you something. Genius is common. I am so excited to share with you my genius and continuing in the legacy of the genius of my father. Ray Charles was known all over the world as the genius of soul. He truly created an image for himself through his music, through all of his accomplishments, from being from the rural South and being blind and overcoming all of these obstacles that many people across this nation would consider supernatural. And through his legacy, I get to share in that through my own music, Behind the Shades, Hope Beyond the Darkness, my book that I wrote about my story, which talks about the life that I had being the daughter of Ray Charles. It talks about my life through drugs and addiction. It talks about me overcoming through my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who did for me what I could not do for myself. I get to talk about my genius through the music that I have, that I get to share through my own songs, the stories of my life and what I've been through and how I overcame through the love of music, through being able to write my feelings and emotions down so that I could share them with you. I get to travel all over the world sharing my testimony of being freed from 21 years of crack cocaine, being freed not just in my mind, but being freed behind the bars of federal prison. I want to talk about how important it is that you know that you have a genius inside of you that is waiting to just come alive, and all you have to do is know that your genius is there. I'm Sheila Ray Charles, and I'm excited to tell you that genius is common. And never forget that that awakening is inside of you, and all you have to do is trust and believe that you have a genius living inside of you. God bless you. God keep you. And please find me on SheilaRayCharles.com, Sheila Ray Charles on Facebook, Sheila Ray Charles on Twitter, and look more deeply inside of the work that God has given me to share with you. God bless you, and I'll look forward to seeing you soon. And remember, genius truly is common. Thank you.
Everybody thinks we're all mother. Who are they to judge us? Mother, mother, simply call me sweet where I hang on. Mother, mother,
Tri-Family Channel. Tri-Family Channel.